Good morning. Today's daf and ksuvos is Ayin Beis. We are at the Mishnah. A lot of big topics coming up in today's daf. This is a daf, which means we're doing everything in really short and quick order. So on the front end, I apologize. It's some of the more relevant and important. I'm not gonna be dwelling much. We're gonna be talking about what are grounds for divorce, and not only grounds for divorce, but when a woman forfeits her ksuva based on her actions and her conduct. Okay, this is the seventh parak of the Masechta. We opened up the first mishnah of the seventh parak, talking about a woman making nedarim, right? He makes a neder against her. She's making a neder. He's mekayim the neder. Okay, so hamodes esisto shelo telech lebeit avia. So, and by the way, I'm sorry. And also, so we're talking about where she's going to be forfeiting. So we're also going to be talking about where his behavior is so unacceptable that we're going to force a divorce. She will receive her ksuva, but in other words, but his behavior is so intolerable. So we're coming at it from both sides, meaning we are going to be assigning blame to him under certain circumstances and assigning blame to her under certain circumstances. With that stated, with that short introduction, well, let's get underway. Amadus Yisha Shalotech Lebeis Avia. So tells his wife, that's it, you're not going to your parents anymore. So, I'm done with you going to your parents. So, and he makes a neder. Now, exactly, right, this really does require more explanation, meaning how is a neder going to prohibit her from her going to her parents' house? A neder can prohibit objects, but can it prohibit her from doing an action? So I know, I'm aware that this does require more explanation, but for our purposes right now, let's just say succinctly that he forbids it. He forbids it. You're not going to your parents' house. So if her parents live in town, so 1 month is tolerable, anything more than 1 month is intolerable. And now let's say that her parents are out of town, so one regal, one yantiv of this iser, where he's creating the iser, so that's tolerable, but three is intolerable. Obviously, conspicuously absent in the Mishnah, is what about two regalim? Okay, so we're going to come back to that. Hamad yosisha shelo telech lebeis ha'avel lebeis ha'mishta. So yotim v'yiteng suva. Mimnei shenol b'faneham. He says to her, you're not going to a funeral, you're not going to weddings. So again, that is unacceptable behavior on his part. And so therefore, that is now going to be grounds for divorce. And because it's his fault, so therefore she is going to be receiving her ksuva. V'imayatoy mishum davar acher rashai. But on the other hand, however, if he makes a taina, and the taina is that basically there's reasons why I don't want you going there. The Mishnah doesn't tell us what those reasons are. The Gemara will. So, and we're going to see in the Gemara. So then he can make such declarations. If he makes ridiculous instructions for her. So a couple of examples in the Mishnah. Right, our private conversation, I want you to tell other people about our private conversation. Again, we're going to get a little more clarity in the Gemara in terms of what the Mishnah is making reference to. So that is just intolerable behavior on his part. So once again, grounds for divorce, and she's going to be entitled to a ksuva. Alternatively, he says to her, look, I want you to fill the bucket and empty the bucket out. Okay, well, why do I want you to do that? That's what I want you to do. So once again, that is unacceptable behavior on his part, grounds for divorce, and she will be receiving ksuva. Again, every case in the Mishnah, the Gemara is going to elaborate on. So, hagufa kashya, the first obstacle, the first hurdle that we're covering here in the Gemara, we're in Ayin Aleph Amud Beis, we're right after the Mishnah. So the first obstacle that we're going to try to figure out is where her parents live out of town. So what do we say? If he forbids her from going to her parents' house, so for one yontif, it's tolerable. For three, it's intolerable. The obvious question, what happened to the number two? So hagufakashi amat regalacha yikai mashnaim yotivi tank suva imasefa shloshi yotivi tank suva hashnaim yikayim. So where are we on the magic number two? So Amar Rabbi Yisefa asan lakohenes Rav Yehudihi. Gemara gives two approaches. Approach number one of the Gemara is that our Mishnah is following the position of Rav Yehuda. Remember the previous Mishnah? What did Rav Yehuda say? That if the husband is a Kohen, so let's tolerate it a little bit more. Why? Because for the Kohen, if he divorces her, that's it. End of story. So therefore, for the Kohen, let's try to negotiate a little bit longer because the divorce is going to result in end of relationship forever. Okay. So, and when the Mishnah says the number one, that is for Eishes Yisrael. In other words, after meaning when you get to the second yontif and he's still forbidding her to go to her parents, that's intolerable. But when it comes to an Eishes Kohen, so we're going to basically try to work with them one more yontif to see whether or not we can resolve.
Is this annually or just forever?
No, he's saying that's it. Done. I don't want you going there anymore.
Ever.
Period. Period. Okay.
In
so.
Days, I think women.
Okay. Fine. Right. 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 Rabba Barula Amar Lo Kasha Kam Berdufa Kasha Bishen Berdufa. So, and the Gemara gives a second approach, and that is that the reason why the number two is missing in our Mishnah is because depends on how often, how frequently she goes to her parents' house. If she goes often to her parents' house, so two becomes intolerable. If she doesn't go that often, so then two is not intolerable. Okay, so it's just in other words, there's no hard line to draw in the sand over here simply because not every woman is the same in terms of the frequency in which she goes and visits her parents. And then, as long as we talked about the woman going to her parents' home, the Gemara is going to quote a couple short drushas. Number one, Aziyisi b'yinavka motzei shalom. The Gemara quotes a pasuk from Shir HaShirim, eighth parak of Shir HaShirim, which is that I know what the Gemara is going to say, but basically she's running home to her parents' house to tell her how happy she is with her new husband. And I'm Rabbi Yochanan Kekal. She names Shlama beveis chameha, uredufa leilechu lahagid shivcha beveis avia. In other words, and that's the kind of relationship we want with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, the kind in which we're happy, we're the happiest people. Va'yabu yamahuna Hashem tikrei ishiva lo tikrei li od baali. The Gemara quotes the second drasha, and this is based on a pasuk in Hosea. And I'm Rabbi Yochanan Kekal beveis chameha, v'lo Kekal beveis avia. And in other words, what's the kind of joy that the Jewish people are going to have with the Kadosh Baruch Hu? The kind of joy where we're talking about husband and wife who are entered into the second stage of marriage, not just the first stage of marriage. Okay, good. Hamadir Sishta. So Bishlam Labeis HaMishnah. So the Gemara says, look, things I understand the Mishnah, things I don't understand the Mishnah. He's forbidding her from going to Chasnas. So the Gemara says, Ika no b'fanel. So the Gemara says, that's intolerable. Because basically she's going to the Chasna to enjoy herself. And he says to her, I don't want you to enjoy yourself? Okay, that's unacceptable. That I understand. But if he's forbidding her from going to funerals, look, going to funerals is not exciting. It's not simcha. So why is that grounds for divorce? And why do we assign fault to him? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. So Tana, the Gemara gives an answer. The Gemara quotes the Bryson giving the answer. And that's Lamacher, Yimesa, Vein Kolberia, Softa, Vikadamra, Vein Kolberia, Sofna. So, because she understands how the world works. The world works in a system of reciprocity. And what happens is that if I go to other people's funerals, people will come to my funeral. And so what you're doing is you're prohibiting me from going to other people's funerals. No one's going to come to mine. And that creates stress and anxiety. And he's not allowed to give her that kind of stress and that kind of anxiety. Tanya, the Gemara quotes another brisa, hammering this point. Hiya, Rabbi Meir Omer, my dichsiv tov aleches beis avel mileches al beis misht ba'asher husof kol adam v'hu yitain. I'm sorry, v'hachai yitain alibo. The Gemara quotes a pasuk from Kohelis, seventh parak of Kohelis. Better to go to a beis avel rather than go to a beis mishta. So you have a wedding or a funeral, and you have a conflict. So what do you do? So it's a pasuk. Pasuk tells you exactly what to do. Better to go to the funeral rather than go to the wedding. So my v'achayitena libo. Good. So the basic mussar we understand, but in terms of the end of the pasuk, what does it mean v'achayitena libo? The words that could translate, but what does it mean? So dvarim shomisa, the safar yispanune, the kavar yikbarune, the yidal yidlune, the levai yilavune, the tan yitanune. So the end of the pasuk comes to tell us that this reciprocal principle, that whatever I do for others, that will people will do for me. And if I eulogize, I'm going to go in the order that we just went through. If I eulogize others, others are going to eulogize me. If I bury others, others are going to bury me. If I raise my voice for others, others will raise their voice for me. If I escort others, in other words, to their final rest, they'll do the same for me. If I carry the coffin, they're going to do it for me. So the reciprocal principle tells us that however I treat others is the way I'm going to be treated. And this is not just true while we're alive, it's also true even for death as well. Now, if he tells you, I don't want you going to that particular chasna because of a reason, the Mishnah doesn't specify. The Gemara will. So the Gemara offers one pshat in the Mishnah, and that is, I know the people that are there. The people that are there are immodest people. And I don't want you hanging out with those kind of immodest people. I'm Rav Ashi, lo amaran ela adiz chazek, aval lo is chazek, lo ko kaminei. So the Gemara qualifies. And Gemara says, yes, it's true that if you know that there is a seedy crowd that is going to be hanging out over there, so then you can tell your wife not to go there. However, you can't guess that there are that there are people there that are immodest. You have to know it. So, but if you're just guessing, I don't want you going there because maybe that's unacceptable. Now, let's say this is another case in the Mishnah where he tells her, I want you to go ahead and to tell over our conversations to others. So the Gemara says, okay, I don't understand what's the problem. So I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Shmuel, V'am Shakalon. In other words, I'll tell you what the problem is. The problem is that, and this is just a pshat in the Mishnah, is that they were having private conversations, and the way the Rambam describes it, in other words, bedroom talk, and then after having bedroom talk, he then says, you know what? I want you to share that bedroom talk with others. That's wildly inappropriate, and if he's asking her to do that, telling her to do that, so once again, grounds for divorce, and not just grounds for divorce, but in other words, he's going to have to pay ksuva. Next case in the Mishnah, where his instructions are, I want you to fill the bucket and empty the bucket, right? So, Vitavid, the Gemara says, okay, he's instructing her what to do, so why doesn't she do it? Right? Simple, right? if it were only that simple. So, I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rav Shmuel, so Shetamale Vidnofetzas. So the Gemara says no. In other words, what he's asking are things that are unreasonable. So Tamale Vinofetzes, so I'm going to say over Rashi's pshat over here, and that is that after having Tashmish, after having relations with his wife, he then instructs her, you know what? I don't want you to get pregnant. So I want you to do some sort of physical manipulation in order to eject the zera. Okay, is it a good form of contraception? So that's not for me to say, right? But we've seen a number of Gemaras, this one being one of them, that there is a way for a woman to basically prevent pregnancy even after having had relations. Okay, so so basically he's instructing her to do that, and that's unacceptable. Okay, gets us to the discussion of she's not mitzvah, she doesn't have a commandment to peruvu, so why is it an issue? But we already saw together the Gemara in Yevamos. The Gemara in Yevamos says that even though she doesn't have a mitzvah peruvu, but the Gemara doesn't say this, but it's okay. We could say this. First of all, she has an innate internal desire to have children. Okay, that's not that. And what you're basically doing is making life for her more stressful, right? Unreasonably stressful. That's number one. And then the Gemara also points out. Now I'm quoting the Gemara in Yevamos, and the Gemara points out that on top of that, also, in other words, she can make a legal claim to want to have children, even though she's not mitzuvah in having children, but she can make a legal claim. What's her legal claim? I need people to take care of me when I get older. In other words, so my need for children is not just an emotional need, which it is, but on top of that, it's also it's a pragmatic need. In that, when I get older, who's going to take care of me? You? Right? Let's get real. In other words, I need children to take care of me. Good. Anyway, so when he's telling her that I don't want you to become pregnant and I want you to manipulate your body after Tashmish, that's unreasonable. Grounds for divorce. Now, we just quoted a pshat in our Mishnah by Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. The Gemara also quotes a Braisa. And the Braisa says that what he's telling her to do is fill 10 jugs of water and then just dump them. Where do you dump them? By the garbage heap. Okay, which basically is a huge waste of her time. Now, Bisham, Shmuel, Mishum, Hachiyot, Evitank, Suva. Now, the pshat given by Shmuel actually sounds a lot better because the Mishnah says grounds for divorce. But Ella Masnisa, my nafkalamina. But from the Bryce's standpoint, so why does she care? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why she cares. I'm sorry, my nafkalamina ta'aved, meaning if he's telling her to do something, so why doesn't she just do it? So the Gemara says, Amarava Babrachan, Amarav Yochim, Imnei, Shinir Kishota. Because how is this perceived? In other words, she's filling water and she's dumping it in the garbage heap, and the perception now is that people think she's a fool, all right, more than a fool. Meaning people will think she's deranged, she's clinically insane. And what the husband cannot do is he cannot put her in those kinds of positions where she's going to be looking foolish. So if he's giving her instructions that are going to, by design, make her look foolish, that's unacceptable. Again, grounds for divorce. Am Rav Kahana, Madirsi Shoshalo Tishal, Shalo Tashil, Nafa Vekavar, Rechan Vetanu, Yosef Yitank Suva. So, Masiya Shemra, Bishchenu Seha. So if the husband's instructions are that you cannot neither borrow nor lend. So that is unreasonable for the husband to give such instructions to his wife. And so it's going to be grounds for divorce. And again, because it's his fault, so therefore he has to beg suva. So Tanya Namihachi, the Gemara quotes a brisa making exactly this point. And that is, Amad Yotisha, Shalotisha, Shalotashil, Anafa Vakavar, Echad Matan, Yotzim Yitink Suva, Minesha Masiyah, Shem Rabish Chenusah. So if you are instructing her not to borrow nor to lend, so what you're doing is you're giving her a shemra. In other words, everyone knows that this is a strange woman, right? She doesn't borrow, she doesn't lend. So v'chein hi shenadro shalotish al v'shalotashil nafa v'kaver echan v'tanor shalotarog begadim naim levanav teitzer shalobiksuva mimnei shemesiaso shemra b'shchenav. And if she is the one who's prompting the neder, meaning she's making a personal neder, I'm not borrowing, I'm not lending, I want to be so independent that I do not want to have, right, quote unquote, normal relationships with other people. So there, now because she's the one who made the neder, so now it's grounds for divorce. But because she made the neder, so Tate say, shelo b'ksuva. She's going to be exiting the marriage without a ksuva because, once again, behaving in this manner is just unacceptable. So if he's the one who's prompting that behavior, so grounds for divorce and he pays her ksuva. If she's the one who's prompting that behavior, so grounds for divorce and he has to, and I'm sorry, and she forfeits her ksuva. Okay. The Eliyosa Shalob Ksuva. Okay. Obviously, now where we are, we're at the Mishnah, Nayin Beis Amud Aleph, and a continuation of the discussion of what is going to be grounds for divorce and signing fault. So, if it's his fault, pays Ksuva. If it's her fault, forfeits Ksuva. Eliyosa Shalob Ksuva. So, what the Mishnah now is going to do is give us a category, two categories of the kind of behavior that she's going to engage in, which is going to be a forfeiture of Ksuva. Averus Adas Moshe, V'Yehudis. So category number one is where she violates the laws of Moshe, otherwise known as the Torah. Category number two is Yehudis, where she's not following Jewish practice, right? We'll call it, for our purposes today, we'll call it Jewish customs, but it's more than Jewish customs. In other words, these are accepted Jewish practices. Okay. Ezui Das Moshe. So good. So now that we have the two categories, so let's discuss. What does that mean, Das Moshe? Machilaso Sheinu Musar. Misham Shato. Nida, velokos lachala, and v'noderes v'ena mekayemes. So four examples of what is considered Das Moshe. So example number one is that she gives him food, but doesn't take off shumas and maisos. Number two is that they're intimate with one another, but she's in nida, she knows it, she doesn't inform him. Example number three, she's not taking off challah off the dough, which is really just another form of example number one. And finally, example number four is she makes a neder, but she's not mekayem the neder that she makes. Okay, so those are the four examples. Now, notably over here, just to state the obvious, in other words, if she violates Torah laws in general, so is that grounds for divorce? Presumably the answer is no, right? In other words, because what is clear from the Mishnah, and it will be even clearer in the Gemara, is that we're discussing a scenario in which her violation of Torah law is going to infringe on him. In other words, these examples over here, and you'll see, this will become even clearer in the Gemara. These examples are in the Mishnah, is that not only is she violating the Torah, but she's bringing him into it as well. She's bringing him down.
If she makes a neder, and basically he's mekayem it because the neder is sustained, right?
Let's get to the Gemara, and it'll become clear in terms of why her not keeping her nedarim is going to bring them down. I'm going to ask you to wait just a little bit, because the Gemara is going to explain that one as well, right? And it goes without saying, obviously, right? A functional marriage is going to be where they're both complying with the Torah, right? That's a pretty obvious point. But we're well beyond that discussion. In other words, our entire discussion over here is an extraordinarily limited discussion regarding at what point in time is it going to be a dissolvement of the marriage, and we're also now discussing the issue of money, meaning whether or not she is forfeiting or not forfeiting her ksuva. So being that that's the only discussion we're having, so this is a really limited discussion, so that's the only discussion we're having, so her violating the Torah is only going to be a forfeiture of her ksuva, is that when she's violating the Torah, she's also bringing him into it as well. Okay. Hopefully I made that point clear. Ezu Das Yehudis. Now we're in category number two. Category number two is that she's not following Jewish practice. So Yotzev Rosh HaParush, she's going around with her hair uncovered. Tova B'shuk, she is spinning thread in the marketplace. Umedeber Sim Kol Adam, she's speaking to everybody. Okay, so those are very generic, general explanations of the Mishnah. As you can imagine, when we get to the Gemara, everything is going to be specified better. Abishal Omer Af Mekalasos Yoldav Bifanav. What she does is that she curses his father in front of him, meaning presumably in front of her husband. Okay, that is also going to be grounds for divorce, including forfeiture of the ksuva. Rabbi Tarfon Omer Af Hakol Anis. If she's really loud, she's so loud that when she speaks in this house, people hear in the next house over. Again, that's also very generic. When we get to the Gemara, we're going to understand that even better. Okay. So here we go in the Gemara's discussion, step-by-step analysis of our Mishnah. So number one, what she does is she feeds him something that was not, where Trumas and Maisos were not taken off. So Ahechidam, the Gemara says, I want to understand the case a little bit better. And that is, I diyada nifrosh, I delo yada minayada. Look, seemingly there are really only two options from his perspective. He knows that she didn't take off Shema Samaisos, therefore, let him not eat the food. It's really that simple. And he doesn't know, and if he doesn't know, right, so then what is he supposed to do? He didn't know. So Lotzicha da Amarlei, so the Gemara explains, here's what happened. What happened was, is that she came home with the produce, knew what happened. She says, I'll tell you what happened. In other words, I got it from a Kohen, and he took care of it for me. He took off Trumas HaMaisos. And so, good. So that was her explanation. And then what happens is, he bumps into the Kohen the next day, and he says, thank you very much for taking care of my wife's produce. I really appreciate it. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Okay. So, and what turns out is that she's making up stories. So now he knows that he can't trust her. Okay. So, umisham shato nidam, hechidami. And the Gemara is going to have an almost identical discussion over here. Idi adaba nefrosh, idolo yada nismach lavei. Dam rav chidna barkana, mashmo, minayin li nidisho sefer sa'atzmam, shenemer v'safra la, shivas yamim, la le'atzmam. So the Gemara says, look, your two options are either he knows she's an ida, and then he'll abstain, or he doesn't know, and he trusts her, and the halacha allows him to trust her. The Gemara quotes a drasha, v'safra la, she's going to be counting, which means that she doesn't have to count in public. In other words, a private count is fine, and even if he doesn't hear her count, in other words, but as long as she's keeping count, good. So at the end of the count, she'll tell him the count is over. Okay, we can re-engage in tashmish. So those are your two options. And what's the case in the Mishnah where they're having relations when she's an Ida, either he knows and he abstains, or he doesn't know and he's allowed, halacha allows him to trust her. So the Gemara says, Lotzricha da Amarle, Ploni Chacham, Tiare Elias Adam, Vazo Shaila Vishakich Shikra. So the Gemara says, I'll give you a couple suggestions. One suggestion is that she had a Mara, she had a discharge, wasn't sure whether or not it makes her an Ida or not an Ida, depends on the color. Gemara Nida discusses this at length. So, and she went to a chacham. The chacham said, it's fine. At least that's what she told him. And then, in a follow-up discussion he had with the chacham, he's like, I never had a conversation with your wife. I don't know what you're talking about. And now he realizes from this point forward, can't trust her. Alternatively, she's going around town with her nida clothing. We are going to be at a serious impasse in terms of relating to this Gemara, right? Bismanenu, nowadays. I say nowadays as if it's 20th century, 21st century. Okay, obviously this is an old practice in which, so women nowadays do not go around wearing clothing that is going to tip off whether or not she's a Nida or not a Nida. Okay, so it's going to be very hard for us to relate to. But back in the day, that's what women did. Meaning when women were not a Nida, they wore one set of clothing. And when they were a Nida, they wore another set of clothing. Now, I know, by the way, because I don't have great explanations, isn't that immodest? Isn't that, right, that it doesn't speak to a modest situation where she's informing everybody when she is or not available to her husband? I'm with you. Like I said, it's hard for us to relate to this, but that used to be the practice. Considering that that used to be the practice, now, when she's going around town with her needed clothing, and then the husband's with her, So now, even though she didn't tell him she was an Ida, he didn't know she was an Ida, but he knew. In other words, by virtue of the clothing that she's wearing, he knew. And Malkus, in other words, and if he engages in relations with her, so then he's going to be subject to Malkus. The Gemara in Kedushin discusses this in more detail. This is a Malkus on what is called a Chazaka. Meaning there are certain assumptions that you make. This is an assumption that you make, that when she's wearing the clothing, she is a Nida. Now, Velo Kotzel HaChala Hechidame, same discussion now regarding Chala. And that is, she didn't take off Chala. What are your two options? Hechidame Idiyada, Nifrosh, Vidalo Yada, Mineyada. So either you know or you don't know. The husband knew or he didn't know. If he knew, don't eat the dough. If he didn't know, he didn't know. So Lo Tzricha, Damrele Ploni Gabal Tikein Li Esa Isa VeAzro Shaili VeShakir Shikra. Okay, same discussion. Quite frankly, unclear in terms of what we gained in this extra in this next case over here, because it really is the same as the first case. In that she told him, "Look, I went to the baker. He baked the bread for me, and he was mafish challah. So we're good." And then in a subsequent discussion with the baker, "So thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Appreciate what?" Okay, and then a discovery that she was making up a story. She was lying.
When you're buying bread, who is responsible for it?
Great question. Typically, typically
the baker, right?
the baker. The baker is. Yeah. In other words, right. Correct. If he makes the bread. In other words, he had it at the point of dough. So he's responsible. Correct.
What is wrong with her making the assumption that the baker was not precious challah?
Like,
was it the onus on her to?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. It turns out that she never even went to the baker. She just made up the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I said this in the Mishnah. I'm just going to say it one more time. Might not be true. I may say it again later this morning. But in other words, the discussion over here is extraordinarily limited, because we're talking about at what point is the marriage broken, meaning that they are going to be, I'm going to use the word compelled to get a divorce. I'm not exactly sure what the real correct verbiage is, but in other words, it is grounds for divorce, and maybe Beis Din will step in and force a divorce. I'm not sure about that particular point, but the breaking point of the marriage. Okay, let's say it like that. It's nice and simple. So what exactly is the breaking point of the marriage? When she violates the Torah and it affects him, right? That's an important stipulation. Meaning if she violates the Torah, again, then you're talking about dysfunction in the marriage, but we're talking about the breaking point. The breaking point is where she violates the Torah and it affects him. So you saw that in the cases that we just gave, in the first three cases of the Mishnah. What about the fourth case of the Mishnah? That's what we're going to cover right now. V'naderes ve'ena mekayemes. Amar mar ba'avon nedarim banim meisim shenamar al titen espicha lachti espesarecha. Ve'ezuin maisi adav shal adam omer banav v'nosav. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you. She makes a neder and she does not keep the nedarim she makes. So what it's going to do is that particular avera will cause the death of the young children. Now, generally speaking, right, lo yumsu avos abanim, ubanim al avosam. Right, in other words, everyone is going to end up being responsible for their own averos. Your averos, generally speaking, will not affect others. That's generally true. And like every rule, there's exceptions. This is an exception. And that for ba'avon nedarim. Now, I wish I could give you a clearer path of why it is that for the ignoring a neder and for violating a neder, why does that particularly affect the young children? I don't know why that line is drawn, but it is. And so therefore now it comes out that her behavior is going to be affecting you. Now, I understand it's not you directly, but in other words, it's going to affect the family structure. Rav Nachman, same point, but he derives it from another pasuk. And that is, L'shav ikisis b'nechem, L'shav al iskei shav. So, right, L'shav literally translates is that for nothing, so he kisis b'nechem. So I'm going to afflict your children. But over here, the drasha is, and it makes sense over here. In other words, it demands a drasha. What does that mean, L'shav? So al iskei shav, meaning that when you make a shvur, in this case a neder, and you don't comply with the neder that you make, so he kisis b'nechem. That's the pshat in the pasuk. Okay, but the same basic point. Tanya, how your Rebbe Meir Omer kol yadei bishoshin nederes ve'enem mekayemus yachzor v'yidirenem. So Rebbe Meir says, look, You have a wife who is making nedarim, and she's not complying with a neder. So Rabbi Meir says, I have a strategy. Meaning we do not have to terminate the marriage, but rather follow me on the following advice. And that is, Yachzor v'yidirenu. Make her make another neder. The Gemara says, wait one second, what? So yidirenu by my misakin-law. So the Gemara says, I didn't understand that at all. The Gemara says, okay, I'll explain it a little bit better. Ella, yachzor v'iknitena, kidei shetidur b'fana v'yafir la. So what you'll do is basically you'll push her buttons. Okay, you'll incite her. And you'll make her upset, and you know what's going to happen. In other words, unfortunately, this has been the trajectory of this marriage. In other words, she gets upset and she makes Nedarim. So, but here, Rameer advises, so what you'll do is you'll push her buttons, she'll make the Neder, now you'll be made for the Neder. Because now she made it in front of you, and now you'll be made for the Neder. Now, the solution, Rameer, definitely needs a lot more explanation. Because your Afara is good for the Nedarim that she currently made. What about the Nedarim that she made already historically? How is that? How is your Hafara now going to help that which she did in the past? So I it needs more explanation. But let's just say simply right now, even though it's an insufficient explanation, Rav Meir says, this is what I advise. This will cure the marriage. So Amru Lo, so they say to Rabbi Meir, we totally disagree with you. Ein Adam Dar Im Nachash Bikfifa. Right? Try living with a snake in a basket. Okay, in other words, you're going to get bitten by the snake. In other words, if this is the kind of woman that she is, that she makes Nedarim, and right now, what are you giving? You're giving a one-time solution, right? Have her make Nedarim in front of you. You'll be made for the Nedar. Okay, great. In other words, this is the kind of woman she is. Trust me, she will be making Nedarim in the future. You won't be there. It's not advised. Tanya, Ayah, Rabbi Yehuda, Amar, Kol Yedei, Bishur, She'eno, Kotel, L'chala, Yachzor, V'yafrish, Achareha. So what the Gemara tries to do is, Rav Yehuda gives a similar type of advice for the woman who's refusing to take off challah from the dough. And so what you'll do is that you'll run into the kitchen, you'll take off challah. What's the big deal? So Amr lo, in adam dar, im nachash bit fifa. Once again, the Chachamim turn to Rav Yehuda, and the Chachamim say to Rav Yehuda, try living with a snake in a basket. Meaning, you're not going to be able to solve this problem all the time. You'll be there on occasion. You'll be able to spot check and to have some success in solving this problem, but you're not going to be solving the problem. Okay. Now it's two things. In other words, there are two Tanaim. In other words, right, I picked up on this not after the first reading, but whatever. But there are two Tanaim who basically are trying to solve the problem of the woman who is either making way too many nedarim or the woman who's refusing to take off challah. And Rav Meir in the first case, Rav Yehuda in the second case, basically say, you know what? There's a way to treat this problem. And the Chachamim in both occasions say, no. In other words, this is going to be an ongoing situation. This is going to be an ongoing problem. You're not going to be able to solve for this problem. Good. Now, what the Gemara is simply going to comment is that are Rabbi Meir and Rav Yehuda necessarily agreeing with one another? So, meaning if you go with Rabbi Yehuda, that's case number two, kol shekein ahach. So for sure, you are going to be there in order to, Rabbi Yehuda would agree to Rabbi Meir. Meaning that if Rabbi Yehuda says that you can go ahead and solve for the challah problem, you can solve for the neder problem. But if you're Rabbi Meir, so zimin demikre v'achem, Rabbi Meir won't agree to Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Because how often is she baking bread? Came out every day, if not every day. So in other words, for the occasional neder that she makes, and even if it's not occasional, but nedarim are made not on a daily basis; they're made with a certain amount of infrequency. So Rav Meir would say that you can resolve. But if we're talking about not taking challah off of dough, that's a daily problem. Rav Meir won't necessarily agree with Rav Yehuda. Okay, fine. In both circumstances, by the way, the Chachamim disagreed altogether. The Gemara over here is just making a really fine point in terms of whether or not Rav Meir, Rav Yehuda would necessarily agree with each other. Ezu das Yehudas. So we just covered now the Gemara's discussion regarding category number one of the Mishnah, grounds for divorce when she's violating the Torah. Now we're going to get to category number two, grounds for divorce when she's not following Jewish practice. So Ezu das Yehudas Yotzev Rosh HaPeru. So example number one is her hair is uncovered. The Gemara says Rosh HaPeru Daraisahi. So Gemara says that's a violation of the Torah. Why is that in category number two? It belongs in category number one. A woman's not allowed to go around with her hair uncovered. Now Rashi over here goes over, how did we get from Sota to the Halacha d'Araisa? So Rashi has two pshatim. Rashi believes the second pshat is the Iker. Inami, look at the last four lines of Rashi. The last four lines of the Rashi on this daf, on this amud. Inami midichsiv afara michlal, da'u shaita lav pruahi. So in other words, even though, right, she's a sota, meaning her behavior was highly inappropriate. And perhaps she committed adultery. We don't know yet. But in other words, but right now, her head is covered. Why? Because the Kohen right now is going to be uncovering her hair. So, Shema Minah, in Derech Menos Yisrael, let's say it's Peros Rosh. So you see that it's a ancient Jewish practice that a woman doesn't go around with her hair uncovered. But let's say it even stronger, meaning it's more than just an ancient Jewish practice. By virtue of the fact that it's in the Torah, so it belongs in category number one. It's an Issa D'Oraisa. All right, that's the second way Rashi presents it. See the beginning of Rashi for an alternate explanation. Either way, what is it doing in category number two? It belongs in category number one. So the Gemara says, you're right. So D'Oraisa Kalta Shapidami. So Das Yehuda Safilu Kalta Nami Asar. So the Gemara says there are gradations of head covering. So when it comes to if she puts a basket on her head, so that will satisfy the Torah's obligation for her to have her hair covered. But in order to follow the Jewish practice, so her hair has to be fully covered. Okay, much discussion, and this is where the daf is not going to do today's daf justice, but much discussion to be had in terms of what exactly the basket is, what exactly the full head covering is. Again, this is a discussion well beyond the scope of the daf, but obviously very halach lamaisa. Very practical. Okay. Anyway. The basket. By the way, I didn't fully understand. She's wearing a basket on her head, right? I think that's strange because I don't see people walking around with baskets on their head. Again, this is going back to the good old days where, right? In other words, they carry things on their head, and the way Rashi not here. Rashi does explain it with some detail over here. But but other Rishonim citing Rashi explain basically it's a double basket. Okay, I don't want to get into this, but correct. In other words, it was two baskets basically making contact with each other on the base, right? And basically, one basket is now landing squarely on her head, and the other basket now is basically holding the goods on top of her head. Okay, whatever. So now here's what we're saying. So to satisfy Das Torah, Das Moshe, so a basket's sufficient. But now, in order for her to satisfy Jewish practice, her hair has to be fully covered. Amar Abasi, Amar Rav Yochanan, Kalta Ein Ba Mishum Piru Rosh. So the Gemara quotes in the name of Rav Yochanan that she's wearing this basket, her hair is covered. So the Gemara says, Havi Bar Reb Zera. Reb Zera says, can we investigate this just a little bit more? So Hei Chiyi Lema Bishuk Das Yehudasi. I don't understand. If she's in the marketplace, her hair needs to be fully covered. Meaning a basket's insufficient. We've established that. V'ala b'chatzer, so the Gemara says, well, we're talking about in a chatzer. Chatzer's a courtyard, but over here, it's pretty clear that chatzer over here means a private area. Meaning, it's a private courtyard. So Im Kain, so the Gemara says, really? So a woman has to be wearing a basket when she's in a private domain. So Im Kain, lo inachza, basla avram avinash, yoshevas tachas ba'ala. Gemara says that's unreasonable. It's untenable, right? And a woman basically, I'm going to use the example of being in the house, right? Because it's basically the same point. When a woman's in the privacy of her own home, she needs to have her hair covered. There's not going to be a Jewish woman who's going to be able to stay with her husband. If the requirement is, if the demand is that she's having something on her head at all times, even when she's in the privacy of her own home. The Gemara says that the expectation of women is that when they're in the privacy of their own home and her immediate family is the only ones that are there, our immediate family, and again, I know all this needs much more explanation, right? Who is immediate family, et cetera, et cetera. But again, I'm just giving a baseline explanation of the Gemara. Women are not covering their hair when they're home. They're not expected to do so. There is a Gemara in Yuma. It's famous, right? People love quoting it. So Kimchis walked around in her house with her hair covered all the time. And she had sons who were Kohen Gadol, 7 in total. Okay, that is a... That is an extra degree of modesty. But that's not baseline. Baseline is that when a woman's home, there's no need for her to cover her hair. And on top of that, they don't. So over here, So when Rav Yochanan says that a basket's good, I don't get it. She's either out in the street, basket's insufficient, or she's home, basket's not necessary. So the Gemara says that sometimes a basket's sufficient. When? Limited circumstances. She's going from one chatzir to another chatzir, and she's quickly making her way through the mavui. So, right, the mavui is a place where there are other people there. So there, if she's making a quick beeline from one to another, and she's going to be for a short amount of time being in a mavui, so there the basket's going to be sufficient. Okay. V'tava b'shok. I'm Rav Yudah Mishmuel, Adam. So she's spinning thread in the marketplace. We're trying to understand why is that considered a non-Jewish practice, right? She's violating Das Yehudis in doing so. So the Gemara explains. The Gemara says that because when she's spinning thread, what she's doing is she's exposing her arms to other people. That's immodest. She's basically attracting attention to herself and to inappropriate parts of her body. The thread's going down between her legs and she's basically enticing other people to look in that area. And that's just another example of the Mishnah, another pshat in the Mishnah in terms of why that is considered a violation of Das Yehudis. She's flirting with young men. That's inappropriate behavior. It's a violation of Das Yehudis. Grounds for divorce. So Rabbi Berchana says, I'll tell you a story. One time I was walking behind Rav Ukva, and Chaziz Aliyah Ravya. I saw an Arab woman, Hava Yasva and Kashaja Pilcha. So she was sitting down and she was spinning using a whatever it's called.
A reel.
Okay. Vitova, and she's spinning. So Virad Kinegapanea, and the thread was headed down and it went between her legs. In other words, she was drawing attention to inappropriate parts of her body. So Kevin de Chazisin and Paskin La Palche. Now she saw us. And what she did is she basically threw the reel out there, right? The fishing, if you will. All right? Vishadite. Amrali, and she said to me, now remember that Rabbi Barachan is the one telling the story, and she said to me, so, Ulam, Havli, Aplach, young man, do me a favor. I dropped it over there. Could you go and get it for me? Okay? Fishing is probably the best analogy I could think of. So, Amar Ba Rav Ukva Milsa. So Rav Ukva looked at the situation, assessed the situation, and he said something. Good. Can we get some more information? What did Rav Ukva say? So my Amar Ba, the Gemara's follow-up question, knew what he say. So Ravina Amar Tova B'shuk, and Amar Ba. And Rabbanan Amar B'dabarazim Kol Adam Amar Ba. What Rav Ukva did is he cited our Mishnah here in Ksuvas, meaning this is a perfect example of one of two of the cases in our Mishnah. Either the case of spinning thread or the case of medaberzim kol adam, right? She's right now doing one of the two, or maybe she's doing both. Whatever the case is, that's a perfect illustration. Okay, so an object lesson in terms of what would our Mishnah look like? Happens to be that the object lesson over here was within the non-Jewish woman, but still, the point is still the same. That's the kind of behavior which would serve as grounds for divorce. Okay, Abishal, let's make it our way to the Mishnah. Okay, theme alert for today, by the way. I think almost always, with every case of our Mishnah, the one interpreting the Mishnah is Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Okay, he had a particular Kabbalah in terms of our Mishnah. Okay, anyway. Mekalas Yoldav Bifnei Moldav. What she's doing is the following, is that in front of her own children, she's bad-mouthing her in-laws. Okay, I know, right? Visceral reaction, which I totally understand. Okay, and this idea that your grandchildren are like your children, the Gemara has a pasuk. We're all familiar. So Amar Rabba Damar Le Nechlar Ye L'Saba Babe Bre. Rabba gives an example, right? A lion should eat your grandparents, meaning she's speaking about her in-laws in front of the children. Okay, I'm not sure what Rabba is adding to the discussion. Right, the example, or whatever. He must be adding something. I don't fully follow what he's adding. Rabbi Tarfon Omar Afa Kolanis. Okay, my Kolanis. She's loud. Okay, but that needs explanation. The Gemara is going to give it. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Mashmuel, but Mashmaz Kola Aliske Tashmish. So, she's talking to others about the intimacy that she's having with her husband, meaning after the fact. She's telling others what their bedroom talk. B'masisa tana. So that's one example. In the Braisa, Mishameshes b'chatzar zu v'nishma kol b'chatzar acheres. While having relations, during relations, so she can be heard in the courtyard next over. Now Rashi points out over here, and it's going to be clear in the Gemara that she is loud because it's painful. Okay, so nishma kol b'chatzar acheres. So nice nagabe momen b'masisin. So the Gemara says, okay, if this is a issue of pain, so then this should be in the Mishnah Bechoros. The Mishnah Bechoros goes over various blemishes, physical blemishes. So why didn't this make its way to the Mishnah Bechoros? Ela machvarta kedashim yikara. The first pshat is a better pshat. It's a more correct pshat. Where it's not during Tashmish, it's after Tashmish. Meaning after Tashmish. So the bedroom talk that she's having with her, that she had with her husband, she goes and she shares it with other people. That's a kolanis. That's a woman who's wildly immodest and inappropriate. And that's going to be grounds for divorce. Oh, perfect timing. Okay. Oh, excellent. Okay, Ad Kan, we covered two really, really important Mishnah. I mean, every Mishnah is important, but two fundamental Mishnahs detailing what is going to be grounds for divorce. And we went on both sides, meaning behavior on his part that is just unacceptable and therefore grounds for divorce, but she will be getting her ksuva. And then the next Mishnah we covered this morning on Ayin Beis in Ksuvos is where her behavior is so inappropriate, it's grounds for divorce, and she's forfeiting the ksuva.